All right, so through the wonders of technology, since Google Plus completely crapped out on us this time, we're recording a special edition of the Crystal Ball Run podcast. I'm Kevin McGuire, one of the contributing writers for CrystalBallRun.com, joined today by another contributing writer from the site, Andy Coppins, as usual, and we're also joined today by our pal Brandon Cavanaugh from 8laces.com. Andy, first of all, how are you today?
Other than the snafu, I really can't complain. It's a beautiful sunshiny day here in the land of cheese, beer, and brats.
And Brandon, how are things out in the great land of Nebraska?
Awesome. Much the same. It was a gorgeous day outside. We definitely, you know, tried to actually record out there. I was kind of disappointed about that. And also, I am a Crystal Ball Run alum, if you do recall.
That's true. I was going to make note of that. I didn't want to slight you there, but I know you got some things going on and trying to get the Eat Laces back up and running. I think that's going to be a lot of fun to stay tuned to. I'm glad you guys are having good weather because, quite honestly, I'm having some lousy weather outside, so I don't know if that was playing any kind of role in some of my Google Plus hangups, but it's been raining all day here. It's been kind of cool, so I'm glad you guys are at least getting some good weather out there.
Hey, you're trading... We're trading good weather for bad baseball over here, so.
Yeah, I can hear that. So anyway, what happened was we were trying to have our usual weekly Friday afternoon Google Plus hangout, and for whatever reason, it just wasn't working out. So we decided, let's just get on Skype, let's record a nice little three-person podcast, and we'll see how it goes. Hopefully this goes a lot smoother. So guys, let's kind of talk about some of the stories that happened this week in the world of college football, and I want to start with one of the topics that really came out today, which was the Mississippi State sanctions that are coming out. You know, it's kind of like, compared to some of the other things we've seen over the years, I kind of want to get your guys' take on that. For just in brief, the NCAA basically accepts a self-imposed sanctions as outlined by Mississippi State regarding the violations with a former booster helping a defensive back recruit, Will Redmond, I believe it was, offering him cash and, you know, improper contact, I guess, is basically what it comes down to. You know, what do you guys think about this? Was, was the NCAA handling this appropriately? Was it right to just accept what Mississippi State offered to do, or should it have been any more severe?
It's hard to say, I think, right now, what the NCAA is doing in general. Me personally, when I look to, especially accepting self-imposed sanctions, yeah, they may have said legitimately this is good enough, but then I have to ask myself, okay, they're dealing with internal turmoil, they're still looking at Miami, they're taking shots from Nevin Shapiro over here, the guy actually at the center of the scandal, and like I say, it's hard for me to totally accept that they're just not passing the buck and saying, oh, okay, good enough. The penalties themselves seem okay after reading what exactly happened as to whether or not they should be harsher or whatever. I think they're fine as is. Mississippi State, I don't believe, has gotten in too much trouble. I think overall it's a, you know, relatively clean program, you know, speaking in college football. So, you know, I don't see there being much to do there, anything different.
Yeah, I'm going to second that. I think the other part of this is, just for me, it's like one of those eerie, like, 80s retro movies playing out in Starkville. It's that type of a situation. Like, feels like we're back in Pony Express days, and, you know, cars and cash being given and all sorts of weird stuff there. But, you know, overall, I think Mississippi State, and especially Dan Mullen, has run a pretty clean program there.
I know there's a lot of programs that wouldn't mind Dan coming and coaching in their city. So, I mean, hey.
Yeah, Dan Mullen certainly has been one of those guys over the last couple of years that's kind of padded his profile, and so to speak, and that's why you've heard his name mentioned for some other potential jobs that have been out there. You know, in recent years, he was tied to those Penn State rumors as they were looking to find somebody else, and they obviously ended up getting Bill O'Brien. So, you know, I think Dan Mullen, for the most part, has done a pretty good job with Mississippi State from what we can see. Certainly, he's got some work to do, and I don't know how much of an image problem this really casts on the program, because I think, like we've said, it's relatively minor considering some of the other things that go on around college football. So I don't know if it's just to be expected that these things are going to happen. You know, from all accounts, it seems as though Dan Mullen and some of the leadership people at Mississippi State have been kind of, you know, forthcoming with this, I guess, in a sense. They've been cooperative with it, so I think that actually helps their case, and I think that's why the NCAA decided to just accept the self-imposed sanctions.
Yeah, and when you get down to it, like you say, they were pretty transparent about it. They said, yeah, you know, it was a mistake. It was with a former booster, which I think helps as opposed to somebody that's still actively with the program. And, you know, you can, you know, like I say, you can make a case for wanting to pass the buck and say, yeah, sure, okay, get out of here. You can make a legitimate case saying, okay, that works. Maybe a little of both. But in the end, I don't think it casts a bad shadow or bad light on Mississippi State in general. I think, you know, as long as they keep their nose clean, they should be fine.
Well, the other interesting part here is I didn't see a lot about what's going to happen with, you know, the wins or whatever with the recruit, you know, if he was even playing in games, because it harkens back to the situation where at Indiana for basketball last year with Hanner Mascara Pereira, that's a mouthful in and of itself, but with that whole situation going on where, you know, they had a booster or a former booster, a guy who gave, you know, I think it was like $100 over 2 years in a period of over 20 years ago, and they nailed him for that. So at least the NCAA is becoming a little more uniform in their punishments in terms of that situation happening.
Well, guys, the other NCAA-related issue from this week and really in the last couple of days stems back to with what's been going on with Penn State. And I know I've talked about it a little bit, but I'm kind of curious always to get some other perspectives on this. And, of course, the state of Pennsylvania, led by the governor, Tom Corbett, filed a lawsuit about a little while back seeking basically to overturn the sanctions that were dropped against Penn State. It's a lawsuit that didn't directly involve Penn State, but it was a kind of a challenge to the NCAA's authority. I thought from the get-go it had a slim chance of seeing the light of day when all was said and done, and ended up being the case because it was turned, you know, it was thrown out of court by a federal judge. You know, it's going to be kind of interesting now to see how this may impact what's been going on with the second lawsuit that was basically led, filed and led by the Paterno family. Andy and I talked about that last week on the Google Plus Hangout. But now that this news is out there, what do you guys think that this means for the NCAA and really what it could mean for Penn State, if anything?
Well, I think, you know, Kevin, speaking and kind of moving the story forward from last week, I think, you know, this doesn't have a lot of judicial impact in terms of what's happening with the other suit that's out there because they're seeking different types of remedies. This was an antitrust lawsuit that was put out there by the state. And the other part is a civil lawsuit with defamation and some of the other things. However, both of these lawsuits, the crux of their argument is that President Erickson broke the or had the agreement without the full backing of the board. And, you know, I think that's the interesting part because that's the part of this that when you actually look at the ruling is the part that they used to put forth the antitrust lawsuit and it didn't stick. So you have to wonder if that part of the argument sticks in the civil lawsuit as well.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't have the full recommendation, you don't, everybody's not on board, then obviously that, you know, your defense or your evidence just crumbles. I mean, basically it.
It really does. And really, you know, we're kind of reiterating some of the same things we talked about last week, Andy, but we're, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see how Penn State and the Penn State community really moves forward from this, because like we've discussed, it's a very split community right now between the people that are looking for, you know, to move on in a sense where they can kind of restore the image of the university. And then there's always going to be the people that are still standing by the ideal image that Paterno really cast for himself in the program, because there are, let's face it, there are still a lot of answers that probably need to be had. And, you know, that search for truthfulness, you know, I'm using air quotes because I don't know what's the truth and what's not at this point, but there's still going to be people that are going to be stand by their beliefs that feel that they absolutely need to find something. But let me get to another thing, and we kind of touched on this before, but if you're Bill O'Brien and you're seeing all of this stuff that continues to go on, you know, well, what's going through your head this morning as you kind of, you know, you're going through another day where there's a very split community?
I think Bill's really got to take it a day at a time. I mean, he came in, and I think a lot of people, including myself in this, obviously we're not thinking Penn State was going to do well. You can tell me, Kevin, I don't know what Penn State fans were thinking. I think there might have been some optimism, you know, but maybe low expectations. And if something comes along and they did well, hey, great. You know, you go in with low expectations and if something great happens, hey, you know, bonus. But I think O'Brien did a fantastic job. He's got kids that are on his side that are playing for him. And at the end of the day, his job is to be the football coach. And obviously you want to keep track of your surroundings. You don't want anything legal to come in and get things sticky on your end. And he's got guys for that. He's got an agent. He's got people to tap him on the shoulder if he doesn't see something. But right now, you know, he's just got to take care of his job, which is making sure he puts the best team on the field.
Yeah, and Brandon, just to piggyback off that, I think your last point was the exact right thing. I mean, Bill O'Brien and a lot of football coaches live in an insular world. They live in, you know, what's right in front of them. They don't bother themselves with what's going on around the program necessarily in terms of stuff that they cannot control. I think Bill O'Brien, just from the little bit of dealings that I've had with him, and Kevin, I think you could back this up too, I don't see him as an individual or a coach that really bothers himself with stuff that he has no control over. You know, he's going to bother himself with, you know, how do I get my team better? How do I build chemistry? And going back to Brendan's point about last year real quickly, I think you have to commend him for at least allowing the team to rally around itself. But I think this year, more than last year, is going to be a test as to see, can this program, you know, build off of what's happening with the sanctions? Because last year was a special year. They had a lot of returning talent. This year, a lot of it's gone. You know, Michael Mahdi, Gerald Hodges, and on and on and on. Matt McGloin gone, and some of the other things. It's going to be interesting to see how this team builds itself now that the leadership internally is gone from last year.
I will say this. You guys both brought up the idea that Bill O'Brien, you know, essentially he is a football coach first and foremost, and he's really going to just focus on the football part of things. I will say that's 100% true, but he does take it upon himself when in the right setting to kind of do whatever he can to bring everybody together. He goes on these stops to meet with alumni and you know, fans during the off season. You know, that's one of the messages he tries to get across, especially this past spring when he was on a tour throughout the state and the region. You know, he wants everybody to come together, but basically when it comes down to it, you know, when he wakes up in the morning, he's thinking football, he's going to sleep thinking football, he's dreaming football, he's talking about football all day long. So as far as that is concerned, I'm looking at him, and I go back to last summer, the day that the NCAA sanctions against Penn State were announced. He was very honest and forthright in saying that he's not going to worry about the stuff that he can't control. He really had no say or any impact or input on what was going on at the NCAA sanctions. He accepted them for what they were, and he really focused right from the first start of that, or, you know, the first day of the sanctions. He really just started looking forward. He's talking about what they can do with the schedule, what they can do with the roster. He was just dealing with what was put on his plate, regardless of the outcome. So that's something that truly can be commendable for him. And I'm really curious to see how that goes. So I was interested to see what you guys had to say about that. Let's kind of move on and kind of keep the conversation going here. One of the other things that we were doing on Crystal Ball Run this week was taking a look at the Sun Belt Conference. And for those of you who haven't been paying attention, you know, what's wrong with you? We've been previewing a different conference each week the past couple of weeks, and we're getting to the Sun Belt this week. We're actually wrapping things up as we're recording this podcast, and we're going to start getting into some of those bigger conferences. So you definitely want to be checking in with that. But the Sun Belt Conference, kind of like Conference USA, is being kind of hit hard by the whole realignment process. We knew that this was going to happen to some of these conferences, but we're looking at the Sun Belt Conference right now and kind of figuring out where they stand. They obviously have some making up to do, and they're going to have a couple changes. You know, when you guys look at this conference right now, what's your general feeling about the state of the conference? Who are some of the teams or players you may be interested in the season? Because I've got some things I want to talk about, but I want to hear what you guys have to say too.
I'll tell you what, I have been a fan of the Sun Belt since its inception, honestly. And they got a brand new logo. It's a new attitude and all that good stuff. But no, I really enjoy the Sun Belt. A couple teams that really stand out to me. Louisiana Monroe, I think, is – I think it's a clear favorite to win. They got a four-year starting quarterback coming back. They have had some injuries over the past couple of years, but I think they'll be okay. They also get probably the most dangerous teams in the, or at least two of the most dangerous teams in Arkansas State and Western Kentucky. They're coming to Monroe. And then again, Arkansas State, they're, you know, they're solid. They've got vets throughout the entire 2-deep. Unfortunately, Ryan Alpin, who I was a big fan of, he's gone. You know, after a 4-year tenure there, I am really interested to see how Texas State and now South Alabama and Georgia State do. Obviously, we're not expecting much, but Texas State has now been in the FBS for a year. You know, South Alabama and Georgia State, this is their first rodeo, so I'm very curious to see how they will do. And in general, a couple people to watch out for that I would recommend. I really love Andrew Jackson. He's at Western Kentucky, linebacker. He is a senior inside guy. Love him to death. Louisiana Monroe, guy up front that I actually think is probably going to do real well in the NFL. His name's Josh Allen. It's a center, good size. Another guy, Louisiana Monroe, Jaron Hamm. He had 62 catches as a junior last year, so, I mean, another guy to watch out for. There are some very talented individuals across the board at Arkansas State, Louisiana Monroe. So I definitely say, hey, if you're going to look at the two teams, look at the two teams up top.
Yeah, and we haven't even mentioned Louisiana Lafayette, and you take a look at what they were able to do last year. And I think, you know, the coaching job that is being done there is quite good. But what I'm really interested in, Kevin, my thought process on this is Antonio Andrews, the senior running back from Western Kentucky. You take a look at the numbers he put up last year. He is in the company of only Barry Sanders in terms of all-purpose yards, going for over 3,000 last year. And I don't care who you're playing or where you're playing. Going in college football, going over 3,000 yards is, as a running back or not a quarterback, is an impressive, impressive move. And you add that with the coaching of Bobby Petrino, who, let's face it, is pretty much an offensive genius. I will say that. I'm interested to see what that team can do, considering the fact that they were, 6-6 last year. So I'm interested in that, but I think it's an all-Louisiana battle this year. I think it's Lafayette-Monroe. That end-of-the-season game is going to be the one that everybody, college football fans, better circle on their calendar as that game that's going to matter.
I always enjoy it, but let's remember Andrew is now Louisiana Monroe versus Louisiana.
Oh, yeah. It's not Louisiana Lafayette. Yeah.
Ooh La La is no more, technically. Although the Raging Cajuns have a place in my heart.
Technically,
they do, seriously.
I think, Andy, you're right. That's the game that, you know, the three of us certainly have circled, but I would highly encourage everyone else who's maybe just even a little more of a casual college football fan, you know, that's a game you want to pay attention to, because a conference championship could be very well be on the line. And you know, I think I might be in the minority. I'm actually going with Louisiana in this one.
You're
this
not
season.
In the minority, my friend. We're not.
I know. It seems like a lot of people are going with Monroe, and there's certainly plenty of reasons to go with that. I just, you know, I look at that Monroe team last year, and we all remember the way that their season started with the win against Arkansas. That was a great win. Didn't turn out to be as great as we initially thought, but still, you can't take credit away from them. And they really fought hard the next 2 weeks at Auburn and Baylor, I believe. They didn't quite have the same kind of magic, but yeah, that team showed me something that showed me that they're not afraid to play anybody from these bigger conferences. Obviously, they didn't play the top elite programs, but anytime you go into enemy territory in the SEC or the Big 12 and you come away with a hard-fought game, that earns a lot of respect for me. So I'm kind of curious to see how they can build off of that. I thought maybe at times they may have been a little inconsistent, but I think they're certainly well-positioned this season. But I'm going with the other team, their rivals, just because I call it a hunch, I guess, but they're certainly going to be a very strong team. And if they can pull that game out, they're certainly, obviously, I think that's going to be their conference championship game, your de facto championship game, probably.
And just admit it, Kevin. I was just going to say, Kevin, just admit it. It's all about the Raging Cajun, you know, the whole logo, the whole package for you. It has nothing to do with what's going on in the field.
I absolutely love the Raging Cajuns. I think it's one of the best nicknames out there.
Exactly. How can you not? Now, the other thing, too, about Louisiana Monroe, they've got a very interesting schedule. They're traveling to Oklahoma in August to kick things off, I believe. Then they're playing at Wake Forest and at Baylor back-to-back in September. So to see, again, these are guys, the Warhawks, I believe, there. Louisiana Monroe is a solid team, but we will see just how solid they are within the first 2 months of the season.
Yeah, I agree. And in fact, I had the Monroe versus Wake Forest game as one of the 10 biggest games for this conference, because I think, you know, Wake Forest, while it may not be the top of the top or the cream of the crop in the ACC, is a very solid program. And if Monroe can go into Wake Forest and take that, that says a lot as to where this conference is.
It really does. This conference is really going to be entertaining this season. Really, one of the things I'm keeping a close eye on, I'm sure you guys are as well, we actually kind of alluded to it a little earlier briefly, Bobby Petrino's return to coaching. We all remember how successful he was at the college level, both at Louisville and at Arkansas. I mean, he took those two programs and really took them up to another level. You look what he did with Louisville. Look at what Louisville's doing today. I think it's largely in part because of the effort that was put in during Bobby Petrino's turn there. I think he really took that program to some new heights, and they've really built off of that momentum. And then you look at what he did with Arkansas when he was there. He kind of turned that program a little, you know, going into last season, if he was there, we were talking about a team that was capable of making a push for a BCS championship game. They were ranked that highly. A lot of people were on board with Arkansas based on the last couple of years, and obviously it came to a crashing halt in a sense. And he ends up getting dismissed from the job at Arkansas. He takes the year off from coaching, but now he's coming back at Western Kentucky, and it's one of the big storylines I'm paying attention to.
Well, on the positive, Western Kentucky is they've got a guy like Antonio Andrews, but the unfortunate negative is the entire defensive line not returning starters, maybe a little iffy against the run. So it may be maybe a couple good old-fashioned Pac-10 shootouts.
I'm okay.
Oh, yeah, this conference, if those that are listening have never seen this conference play itself, it is a lot of entertainment. Not a lot of defense, a lot of offense.
Not quite MAC level, because you get some defense there, but old-fashioned Pac-10 is what I would say.
Yep. Yeah, I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually kind of interesting. I mean, last season we were looking at Louisiana Tech, I think it was. Or no, they were in the WAC. But there was a game, what was it? I'm trying to remember the two teams. Was it Memphis and somebody that were going in the 60s or 50s? I don't remember now, but I seem to recall some entertaining games. So, you know, let's move off past that. And we've actually talked about this conference for this long, and we haven't talked about a team that has won the conference championship the last couple of years, Arkansas State. So where are we looking at? Are we overlooking Arkansas State? Are they a team to keep a very close eye on just because of what they've done the last couple of years, or are they really just kind of fallen behind the pack this year?
Well, with Arkansas State, they really sprung with Malzahn coming in last year, was it not?
Yes.
Yes, so Malzahn was there, and then, boing, he's back. But no, Arkansas State, I think they're right up there with the Warhawks as a potential conference winner. I don't know if they're as good as the Warhawks. I think they have the overall superior team. However, they do still have David Oku, former transfer from Tennessee. They've got a very good offensive line. I think only one of them, I think like the tackle, the right tackle or something, is not a returning starter. They've got a solid defense, and I think their kicker was like all Sun Belt or something like that. So I think they can make another bowl appearance. I definitely think they'll contend for that title yet again. The key, though, as we mentioned, is finding somebody to replace Alpin. If they can do that, I think they can easily challenge the Warhawks.
Yeah, I agree. And looking at their schedule, too, they don't have an easy road either. And for me, that's the key, is if they can find in the non-conference schedule, if they can find some continuity with the coaching staff, with a new quarterback, with all that's going on there, they have the pieces to challenge. However, I do question how much of their success for the past 2 years was due to Ryan Applin. And that's not to slight a guy like David Oku or what's going on because they do have some depth around him. But it's again, it's an issue of where your best players are. And this is a conference that, let's face it, is driven by players who can stand out. If you are a standout guy, a guy like, let's say, Colton Browning at Louisiana Monroe or Antonio Andrews at Western Kentucky, you can carry a team to a great season inside this conference.
Yeah, and you mentioned their schedule, which is amazingly difficult. They've got, and these are all road games, they've got Auburn, Memphis, and Missouri just within the month of September alone.
Yeah, I mean, the Memphis game, that should, I mean, Arkansas State better be a favorite in that one. Memphis,
I don't trust Missouri. I cannot trust Gary Pinkel, knowing what I know about him for so long.
Oh, I agree with you. In fact, I think Missouri is a team that, you know, you take a look at their non-conference schedule, they could be in some serious trouble in terms of, you know, kind of getting off the track here a little bit. But in terms of where their season could head, they've got some very difficult non-conference games.
There's one, you know, going back to Western Kentucky, and since we're talking about schedules real quick, I looked at their November schedule. They're playing a lot of games on the road, but they're playing very winnable games on the road. And if you look at the schedule that they have, so I have a feeling that if they can stay in the thick of things as they get towards the end of October, they'll have most of their hard games behind them. So that really would set them up pretty well. Maybe they could sneak into the picture. I know we're talking about the Louisiana schools and Arkansas State, but you know, I just feel like you have to keep an eye on Western Kentucky. You can't overlook them because that November schedule is very favorable to them, I think.
Yeah, because they jump out. They've got Kentucky at home, though. I mean, obviously still going to be difficult. Then they go to Tennessee. But after that,
just real quick, they're playing in Nashville. So it's technically a home game, but it's in Nashville. Yeah,
yes, that is accurate. So technically it's a home game.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, after that, it's I'm not going to say easy, but it's very it's something they can navigate, you know, if they get on a roll. They could be heading down the way to like playing Arkansas State, which is their last game of the regular season, feeling pretty good about themselves. And again, you know, if they take care of that quarterback position, who knows?
Yeah, real quick too, just to jump in on the conference here before we wrap that up, I wanted to also talk, you know, we mentioned Bobby Petrino, but there's another big name, you know, former high level coach, and that's Dennis Franchione at Texas State.
Yes.
How could we forget?
I'm really intrigued by
apparently we did.
Go ahead, Andy.
Oh no, I'm just really intrigued by what this guy could do in terms of that program. There's a groundswell of support for this team in that area, and there's some talent on, especially on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, and I like Texas State. I like these. I want to see these new programs coming into FBS have some success. You know, it's some people call it diluting the pool a little bit, but I like seeing these young programs, these good programs from FCS or so on, or even Division II bump up. I like Texas State as a program. I really do, and I hope they do well, especially with Dennis at the helm. I'm curious to see if they can challenge this year. I mean, they did have problems stopping the run last year, but we'll see. I mean, this is a team that could bump up into, if things go well, into the upper half of the conference.
Brandon, I'm like you. I like looking at these younger, smaller programs that are kind of taking the next step. I like watching these kind of programs grow. You know, I'm not going to stop watching Alabama and USC or Ohio State anytime soon, but I like taking a look at those programs, and I think this Sun Belt Conference is going to be really interesting because not only do we get to see Texas State and Georgia State kind of break into this level of football, and I'm really curious to see what those two schools are going to do because, you know, you're playing in Georgia and Texas. You're going to have plenty of recruits to choose from, hopefully.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to get your first picks, obviously, but there's a lot of talent in those states alone. And then you throw in South Alabama, see what they can do as they continue to move on. And then next year, they're going to be adding Georgia Southern. They're going to be adding Appalachian State. We know what they've done at the FCS level. Now let's see if they can take those next steps as well.
Definitely looking forward to see what specifically those two programs can do at the big boy level.
You bet. That's going to be very interesting to see what happens with those two programs.
Hey, guys, you want to talk some Notre Dame real quick?
Let's talk some Notre Dame.
two things in particular I wanted to bring up, and we can talk about whatever you want. The first thing I think we should address is Eddie Vanderduce. Skipping out on his Notre Dame commitment, taking an offer to play at UCLA. Pretty controversial. Doesn't seem like Brian Kelly wants to play nice, kind of cut him loose and let him keep that fourth year of eligibility before he even plays a college football game. I'm kind of curious where you guys stand on this. Is Brian Kelly in the right? Is he wrong? Should he just cut ties and let him go and get his 4 years elsewhere?
Yes, absolutely. This is something that I will absolutely – I stand by a recruit or even a player every single time a transfer comes up. If a player does not want to be where they're at, or if they sign and they say, you know what, I made a mistake, let him go. Because – You take a very high risk, you know, in that, well, maybe, just maybe, they'll kind of, it's like an arranged marriage. You hope that you fall in love, but the chances, you know, it's maybe 50-50 at best. Whereas, if a guy happens to meet the girl of his dreams, you know he's going somewhere where hopefully he'll be happy for a while, but you know what they say, I'll give it 2 years, right? But, yeah, and that's really what it's about. It's about a kid going where he wants to go. Even if you're a quarterback that wants to jump from school to school, if that's where you want to be, that's what's important.
Oh, boy, oh, boy. This is such a loaded question for me. I see where Brandon's coming from, but I completely disagree. And here's why. And I also see the hypocrisy of coaches jumping ship as well. So I see both sides of this. And that's the other part of it. However, you are signing a national letter of intent stating your intent to go somewhere. Now, here's what I will say. We don't know exactly the parameters of what Eddie is doing and the reason why. That he has kept pretty private. However, If the situation were something like a terminal illness in the family and being very close, wanting to be closer, that's one thing. However, if you're just transferring because you are not 100% sure, then what were you doing signing your national letter of intent to begin with? That's my big thing. Now, if after this year you wanted to move, whatever, go for it. But why should you? Why should a school spend all the money it spends to recruit you, to get you to come there, to do all that, to get you to go there, and then, oh, by the way, sorry, I'm going to back out the last second. It's like walking down the aisle the night before the wedding and then calling it off.
You have a lot of wedding metaphors here. let me ask you this, though. That's a fair point, but let me ask you this. You're saying, okay, we spent all this time and money and resources. Do you want a guy taking up a scholarship and even more resources for an entire year or so before he bolts? So you've just basically blown a scholarship.
But my other point is, this guy has clearly changed his mind a few times. What's to say that once he actually gets into this program and sees where he can go, he doesn't change his mind again? That's the other part. I understand we're dealing with 18-year-olds who frequently change their mind. Lord knows that happened quite a bit when I was 18. But at the same point in time, it's why do we even have the system in place to begin with if it truly means just it doesn't mean anything? You know what I mean? Why have a national letter of intent if you can just make that decision so close to the season? That's the other part that I have trouble with. We're talking about something less than 2 months outside of the season.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. It's an unfair move to the team. You know, I like to side more often than not with the recruit, with the family. And that's kind of a poor move to, you know, towards a team that, you know, they're trying to say, okay, we've got this guy in, and then all of a sudden, whoops, now we have no depth. And I know that's kind of a jerk move, but again, I mean, if a guy doesn't really want to be there, if he's not going to play at 100%, when you have him penciled in to start, like if you really need depth at X position, and even if you don't have him there, if he's not going to give 100%, it's a tough question. But I still find myself siding with the recruit, even if it looks bad. because I just I can't see myself in that position saying, okay, let's hope that he comes around.
I kind of lean more towards siding with the recruit in most situations as well. But I think Andy does bring up some pretty valid points. I will say this, though. I think what's happening here is kind of the exception to the rule. This doesn't happen all the time, but who knows if this could open up the door for more things like this to happen, because if a recruit says, oh, well, he did it, why can't I do it? I can understand the concern there, but I'm really curious. Would an early signing day prevent this stuff from happening? Is that something that kind of enters this conversation here?
No. In fact, I think it would make it worse, mm-hmm. because if you've got a day where people say, okay, you know, at this point in time, I've got all my ducks in a row. And also, the way it has it set up now is you hear this all the time. Okay, I want to make my decision by my senior season. A lot of times it happens. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes guys want the spotlight. They want to go to these all-American games and play it up a little bit. Nothing wrong with that. Sometimes they wait up to national letter of intent signing day. Nothing wrong with that. But if you put a day, let's say, you know, after, let's say, beginning of senior season or whatnot, you're going to see a point where if you've got guys changing their mind left and right all the way up to national letter of intent signing day now, then you've got a situation where guys are like, oh, man, do I really want to go there? I really would like to take some more visits. And I think that just opens a whole can of worms where we're going to see, if we did implement that, where we'd see just I just think it's something that could really put a slippery slope on that. And then we say, okay, how do we can that back up again so it's not an issue? I just see it as more trouble than it's worth.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I also think, you know, what we're talking about and the situation we're talking about is a unique situation to begin with. However, I don't think there's a way to remedy it. I mean, you're dealing with situations that are human, and trying to regulate human behavior is an exercise in futility.
Exercise in the sanity, too. But, yeah, I mean, let me ask you this. Is how many instances of this have we heard of in the past, I'll say, 3 years?
I could have said I can remember.
I could have said five, but I go with three. I haven't seen the past couple of years. Off the top of my head, this is one of the few. I'm sure people could find a couple. But think about all the national letters of intent that were signed, and how many people, young men or even women throughout all athletics did something similar to this. Probably not a huge percentage.
Well, that goes back to the same. It's kind of the exception to the rule here, but like I said, who knows if it opens up a door. But let's talk about a little something on a lighter note as it relates to Notre Dame and recruiting, where we see a Notre Dame commit, Elijah Hood, flush an Alabama offer letter down the toilet. You know, it's kind of funny. I thought it was hilarious. You know, I'm not saying that because I'm an anti-Alabama guy, but I just think, you know, it's kind of funny. But obviously, it sparked a little bit of a controversy, and he's come out and he's apologized for it. You know, it could be a forced apology for all I know, but did you guys think it was funny? Did you think it was offensive? What was your take on that?
I thought it was hilarious. and a good way to invoke the wrath of a thousand suns. But no, it was funny, and at the same time, it's like we're seeing so much new interactivity with recruits with social media now. You've got Vine, you've got Twitter, Facebook, and all this stuff now, right? Mm-hmm. But we're seeing these pictures of hundreds of letters and just stacks upon stacks and stacks of this, and now we're seeing invitations to schools get flushed down the toilet, and who knows what's coming out. And you know, oh really, you're telling me that hey, I think I'll flush an offer from Alabama down the toilet? Oh wow, I'm sorry about that. No, you're not. Because if you know you're going to Notre Dame and you don't want to go to Alabama, please spare me the forced apology and just let everybody hate on you. You know, you can block people on Twitter, please.
Amen. I mean, what does he have to be sorry for? He's made his choice. He's declared where he wants to go. Who It's his prerogative. If he wants to flush it down the toilet, now he might have some environmental wackos on his case for flushing paper down. However,
dispose of an offer, but
exactly. Let's do it the proper way. Recycle. No.
and not a knock on any Alabama fan, but it's like, okay, you guys will see another 5-star prospect for every elect. Don't feel bad about that. I mean, trust me, as an individual who's followed Nebraska for as long as I've seen some horrible things happen 70-31. So if this is the worst that happens to Alabama football in the next year, consider yourself lucky.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think anyone's really crying.
Need to apologize to anybody for anything.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's really going to be crying for Alabama fans for missing out on one recruit because, like you said, Brandon, they're going to have a stockpile of them to choose from. So, to me, again, it's harmless fun. You know, it was funny. He doesn't need to apologize for it, but I guess, you know, maybe it's a good thing that he did. Who knows? But I think one of the things that really comes out of this is the increasing awareness of what you're doing on social media is going to be seen by everybody. And this is something I'm sure the three of us at one point or another have discussed a number of times, but is there any lessons that can be learned here? Do you think if we're going to see any, not so much action, but do you think that there's any lesson to be learned here at all?
There's some advice that I would give everybody, not just recruits, but myself, you two, everybody else. It's just a common piece of advice. Think before you tweet. Think before you post something. Think before you put something out there on the internet, because it used to be if you put something out on the internet, or what we knew as the internet back in the day, because we're old geezers, back with the 56K modems, it wasn't necessarily permanent. Now, just imagine it like this. If you put something out on the internet, imagine the second that you do so, someone somewhere took a screenshot. I guarantee that happens more often than you think. There are ways, and you guys know this, you build a better lock, you'll find a better locksmith. You'll find a ways to get to your Snapchat or, you know, anything else. I guarantee you there are ways that I'm not going to discuss to get through a protected Twitter account. Don't assume that what you're putting out there you can just delete automatically. I think if you go with the, it's going to get, it may very well get a screenshot taken of it right as I put it out there. I guarantee it'll save your butt 9 times out of 10. And by the way, I am guilty of tweeting some stupid stuff. I think we can all say that. So I am not trying to get up on a pedestal here on a soapbox. That is just my general advice.
The other thing you need to remember here is that the NSA is going to see what you're tweeting. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You stole my thunder, Kevin. How dare you?
Yes.
Andy,
well,
I
just want them
to
know that I have nothing to hide. I have plenty of food porn. If they want to say donuts and the like, I've got plenty of it.
It is National Donut Day, by the way, as we're recording this. I don't know if you guys knew that.
Oh, what kind of a donut man are you? What kind of donuts do you guys enjoy?
Well, I mean, I could just say a jelly donut with sugar powder. I think that's probably pretty much a staple to many people. But you know, I got to admit it. You got to stay with the classics as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I gotta go with the just the regular glaze, and then I'm a sucker for the cream filled Long John. So those are joke away if you will, but yeah.
I was trying to contain it. This is actually something I love raspberry filled donuts, which is actually something that my dad and I shared back in the day. So that will always be the top for me, although I don't discriminate, but yeah, that's I haven't had one in forever and a day, but since it's National Donut Day, I think I will take advantage of that.
Guys, that's pretty much all I had, but real quick, either of you have any topics you want to discuss with us before we wrap everything up? Andy, how about you? Let's start with you.
Oh, how can we go this entire podcast without not talking about Indiana's awesome new helmets?
Let's do it.
So I just have a question regarding these helmets. As the holder of the uniform seal of approval stamp, when I go to Bloomington, member of the Big Ten here and all, when I go to Bloomington, I've never been there before, and nor does Indiana play Nebraska in the next 2 years. I'm assuming that because of these helmets, I can get a good shave somewhere. Can somebody please tell me somewhere in Bloomington on campus I can get a decent shave?
Wow.
That's a good one. You know what? We'll have to have somebody get in touch with you about that one, because I honestly, I've never been there, so I can't say for sure.
Honestly, I hated the Chrome ones. There were about four in there that, and I love Chrome, which should tell you something. There were four in there that I enjoyed, but the Chrome was not one of them.
Yeah, actually, the creamsicle ones, I kind of growing on me now that the week has gone by a little bit. I'm not a fan of the Chrome ones. I was at first until I got a better look at them from the side, and then not so much.
I'm like you guys. At least I think I'm like both of you guys. I like Chrome helmets generally, but I was not real thrilled with the Indiana ones. And you know, Brandon, you and I, we've talked about uniforms. I don't know how many times, so I'm kind of on the same page with you with a lot of them. I will say this: of all the helmets that they had, wasn't a fan of the Chrome ones. I didn't really care for the ones. I think they have like the state logo on them or something like that.
Yeah, that was like I could tolerate that, but not to the, you know, that's a little like a softer version of the Pride unis that Maryland busts out. I didn't really I was okay with the one with like the eye. I'll tell you what though, if you told me you have to choose between the Chrome or the one with like an IU and the state flag design on it, I would take the state flag design every time.
Yeah, I agree 100% there. And for those of us who are in Big Ten territory, which is the three of us here today,
we're covering the Big Ten really from one side to the other, really.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm in the middle. Brandon's out in the far west, and you're out in the east coast. So that's perfect. No, but get to Bloomington if you ever have the chance to. The tailgating atmosphere, whether or not you like Memorial Stadium, but the tailgating atmosphere there is one of the best in the Big Ten.
Who has the best Memorial Stadium in college football?
I was going to say, it's like how many – well, interestingly enough, I forget who wrote it, but there was – on Memorial Day, somebody published a piece on which Memorial Stadium was the best Memorial Stadium of all the Memorial Stadiums. And since I bring that up, I'm sure you can guess who was number one.
Yes, that was going to be number one on my list. I don't know how you can't say that. Yeah, Memorial Stadium in Lincoln is awesome, period.
Brandon, I think it has to do a lot more with the – it's been honed to many a good memory for me, but also I think it's the environment and the atmosphere that kind of brushes off.
Brandon, any other stories that we didn't touch on that really caught your eye this week?
Oh, not especially. Oh, actually, no, I will say there's one thing. Kind of on the uniform level and kind of not – I've been paying attention to Lost Letterman and Charles Solis. Charles is the guy, I guarantee you, you all know him. You might not recognize his name or realize it. But all of these amazing and or absurd uniforms you see of NBA teams, NFL teams, NCAA teams, I guarantee you Charles made them. Now, he and I want to say Jim Weber, who runs Lost Letterman, I believe. I don't know if they both worked on this. It was just Charles, it was Jim, whatever. But they created some new concepts for Hawaii's new helmets as they're going back to the Rainbow Warriors, which I thought was very cool. This is like me growing up in the 1980s. It's like, this, I remember this, so showing my age here. Now, again, they're talking about field branding. You know, we all still talk about the Smurf turf. I mean, like Boise State or hate Boise State, we all talk about the Smurf turf. Central Arkansas, I believe, did something similar to this. It was purple and gray, and then Liberty did something similar. It was red and white, I believe. There was a design, and if you haven't seen it, you must seek it out, of Hawaii having this Roy G. Biv just complete rainbow field, which is nothing but colorful rainbow. It was amazing, and I'll tell you what, if I'm gonna stay up till 1 a.m I better it's like, not only does Hawaii put out a quality game, but if I'm gonna be entertained at 1 a.m there needs to be some color, especially in HD.
Well, can you imagine the awful drunken what the heck am I watching moments at 1 a.m if that's happening,
among other
well, right, we're not vices. Going on the illicit route.
No. No, among other vices. But no, I mean, I don't know. It's like, do you guys think, with me, you guys, I don't know if you know much about my my marketing background or just how I look at that from even a college football standpoint. But of course, you know, I enjoy UniWatch quite a bit and I enjoy uniforms quite a bit. Obviously, a lot of fans just see, okay, that is really, really stupid. And I know the people that just heard that concept that have never seen it before are thinking, boy, that sounds stupid. Check it out. Just look at it. And if you still think it's stupid, that's fine. But how do you guys feel about marketing to that scale in college football, especially for the lower programs that may not play for the national championship but are just trying to get noticed?
All you need to know is what happened at Boise State. Just put that out there. And everybody knows who Boise State now or is now. But before they knew who the football team was, they knew about that stadium and about that turf. That's all you need to know.
Exactly right. I was going to say, there's two things that I've learned watching college football where you can really brand yourself. It's with your uniforms and it's with your field. Boise State, blue turf, we all know it. And like Andy just said, you know, people know about the blue turf maybe before they know really about Boise State. And people have really started paying attention to Oregon, not only because of what they've been doing with winning, but really because of what they've done with their uniforms. It really, you know, this whole run by Oregon really started by having these untraditional uniforms. Remember they started out, they had like the metal great pattern or something like that on their uniforms.
Yes, the metal grating. But that's just the thing is, and Kevin, you make a perfect point. Here's the thing about the uniforms that Oregon wears. Whether people like them, are indifferent, or hate them, everybody still wants to see what they wear.
And not only that, but we're seeing schools that want to be like that. You know, every school – not every school, but a lot of schools out there have gone with these untraditional uniforms. You guys know better than anybody else, especially some of the recent ones. But
Game is brought to you by the letters N and W.
Yes. So there's no doubt in my mind that it's a clear strategy. It has proven to work, and a lot of people are trying to emulate that success.
And I think it's fun too. But I mean, as far as the field, I think that's a good tool for smaller schools, especially. Between uniforms and the field, would you guys, coming back full circle, what do you guys think about the full rainbow? Have you seen it? And if you haven't, what would you think about the full rainbow field for the Rainbow Warriors now?
Yes, I have. And not that big of a fan of it.
I saw it. I wasn't really much of a fan of it at first, but the more I looked at it and the more I thought about it, the more I kind of came on board, realizing that this is really just kind of a hypothetical thing. I don't think that there's any real conversation about doing this, but, you know, given what we've seen, I wouldn't be surprised, but I would kind of be interested to see how it would look on TV, especially on HDTV, and, you know, I will be sure to tune in the next time that Boise State is playing at Hawaii, that's for sure.
I got to tell you, though, every time I look at that field concept, I get a craving for Skittles, and I don't know why.
I will also say this, though, guys. This also has a side benefit of educating SEC fans on their colors.
Oh, snap.
And you know what?
Thank you, Gordon G.
I don't know how we got through the last hour without talking
about
him.
Is it G or G? I honestly don't know, and I apologize.
I honestly don't even know where to begin with that. You know, we talked a little bit about it before, but you just can't say things like that when you're the president of a university.
No, but people and me can.
Yeah, and real quick, just to touch on that, because I know we don't want to go too much longer for the sake of attention spans, because trust me, I can't listen to things for too long, otherwise I start nodding off being the senior citizen that I am. In terms of that, I know there are Ohio State fans who are very passionate about Gordon stepping down and saying, okay, he can't just make a joke. Well, first thing, I believe what happened, it was like was it a 3-month period that they were thinking about requesting he step down or something like that? It wasn't just, oh, he made a suggestion about religion in Notre Dame. You need to step down. This was something they've been talking about, I believe. There are people, obviously, very, very passionate Ohio State fans who know the gentleman, who have a relationship with him, who are very, very fond of him. And then there's the other side that says, "Well, yeah, he's been kind of." And I mean, the way here it is from an outsider's perspective, it's like I mean, he's a gentleman that has obviously grown up maybe in a different era, just like any of our grandparents or the older members of our family, and things were acceptable, and now they're really not. And I don't know if that, you know, I mean, sure, I don't think Gordon was out to hurt anybody per se, but I can't get on the air right now and say whatever I want. I can, but I'm not going to. Just like Kevin and Andrew can't. You can't write anything unless we just want to tank anybody from taking it seriously. So.
And yeah, I know we talked about it last week in the Hangout, but do you have any other thoughts now that, given the recent news with him?
Well, I think the interesting part is you, and Brandon brought this up, that this whole 3 month period, it looked like he was going to be fine for at least another year before they let him kind of gracefully, you know, exit the program, maybe let him have one last victory lap, so to speak. But you have to wonder, I think, if these comments would have never seen the light of day, if that Freedom of Information request would never have come out, would we even be talking about him? You know, and would he have apologized? And that's the funny part for me in all of this is, you have to wonder how much he actually is sorry, how much, you know, Ohio State is sorry about this situation. Because if you were truly sorry about it, you would have said something about it, 6 months ago.
And here's why Ohio State fans should not be sorry in the least bit. Here's why they shouldn't be upset in the least bit. So Gordon steps down. Obviously, they're going to have to get somebody to replace him. But he's still being allowed to fundraise. So he's still bringing in millions of dollars. How is this a bad thing? Yeah. Because he gets a different title?
Right.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't get it. He's still going to have his close ties to the university.
And his bow ties to the university. Thank you. But
That's a good one. I think we should end on that. So, Brandon, before we wrap this up, real quick, do you have anything going on? What's going on with your website?
Yeah, I really appreciate everything coordination.com has done for me. I've kind of stepped back, and I'm kind of doing my own personal thing. Stop by 8laces.com. I'm going to be talking about not just Nebraska football. Obviously, if you're a Nebraska fan, stop by, but also national college football. Be sure to follow me on Twitter, 8laces. That's pretty much it for me. But again, I am not just a Nebraska fan. I am a college football fan and a kind of, like I say, a sports fan in general. So hit me up. We'll have a conversation.
And Brandon, of course, you're always going to be welcome to join our Google Plus Hangouts, even if they happen to turn into podcasts like this. So you're always welcome.
It'll work sometime. Has to happen.
Well, yeah, maybe. Andy, how's it going over there with the Madtown Badgers and the B1G time?
Hey, not too bad. Well, a little quiet on the Badger front, but it's calm before the storm of the Gary Anderson era. And, well, we're starting our countdown over at the B1G time to kick off. And it was Purdue week, and next week it's, my least favorite team in college football, and that's the Golden Gooks of Eastern Dakota coming up next week. So make sure you check that out. But we're having a lot of fun over there, and next week will be Minnesota week, so check it out.
All right, so we've got Brandon, we got Andy, I'm Kevin McGuire. For everybody at Crystal Ball Run, thanks for checking us out. Again, this was kind of off the beaten path. We kind of adjusted on the fly, so hopefully it went well, and we definitely will try to get the Google Plus Hangout happening again every Friday afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Central Time for our folks over in the other part of the Big Ten country. We definitely encourage you guys to check it out, and hopefully we'll have it going again next week. Do we know what conference we're talking about next week yet?
No.
I don't know.
Oh, it's a secret. You'll have to just stay tuned to crystalballrun.com, I guess.
Oh, snap.
So, once again, check it out, crystalballrun.com. You can follow it on Twitter, @crystalballrun. And, of course, you can like it on Facebook at facebook.com/crystalballrun. We're also on Google Plus, even though we're not on Google Plus right now. So be sure you check that all out. For everybody at Crystal Ball Run, Kevin McGuire, thanks again, and we'll talk to you soon.